who was released on parole in my hands. And that was a case of rape a few months ago. And the acting minister at the time, because I was in hospital, decided to have that parole revoked. I'm told that of the 1,300 plus minus applicants for parole that I considered in the last 3 years, and having granted only 300 of those, none of the 300 except this one incident actually went and re-offended. So I've asked the officials to give me more details as to what were the circumstances, what went wrong in this instance, because our aim is to ensure that all the measures that we've put in place since we took office yield the desired result, which is that we do not see a single person who we release back into the community committing a single offense. And this we achieve, amongst others, by more stringent application of criteria for consideration for parole. And as a result, I'm told I get to be taken to court on average 10 times a week by mainly offenders who are not happy with the decisions we take not to grant them parole. So for us, our ultimate mandate is to ensure that we create conditions that promote non-offending behavior in society generally. Now, a question was asked as to why the increased numbers of offenders in our correctional facilities. And this is despite the fact that with a number of measures that have been taken, even by the judiciary, you'd recall that with the Constitutional Amendment 2013, 17th Amendment, the judiciary now has ultimate responsibility for the management of courts. So they take responsibility for ensuring that the system overall performs optimally. So that is supposed to help reduce the turnaround time, amongst other things, by which say criminal cases or cases generally get finalized. And in fact, stringent disciplinary measures have been put in place by the JSC to ensure that those that are not pulling amongst the judiciary are held accountable by the judiciary itself in the interests of separation and independence. Now, the reality, however, is because of the underlying socioeconomic drivers, you continue to have high incidence, not just of crime or offending behavior, but especially violent crime. And sadly, over 60% of our prison population is made out of young people, which mirrors the makeup of our demographics in society generally anyway. But it is a target area, youth offending behavior. And we need to look at what are the drivers that drive young people into offending behavior. Again, the social economic issues are alluded to. Chair, we have a bed space nationally of to accommodate about 120,000 inmates. We're currently on average, give or take at any given day, around 160. So we have 40,000 people to accommodate in our 243 facilities without the necessary bed space to accommodate them. That is the reality we're experiencing. There's been a reduction in the number of remand detainees in our facilities over the past decade, from about 60,000 down to about 40,000. But that has not resulted in us reaching the levels that we require. I was in the Free State with the NCOP on Monday last week, and complimented them for being the lowest offending province in the whole republic, and hence part of the reason why their overcrowding is the lowest, and hence we have had to move some of our offenders into the Free State given the extra capacity there. We continue to manage down the numbers, especially in your highly dense facilities, which are your bigger centers, which are usually in your urban centers, and there you see the phenomenon of urban crime playing a role in terms of driving the numbers. If you take Sun City, you take Paulsmo, all those centers are mainly located, they are bigger centers and they are located in bigger areas. Even in the Free State, when I was there, 200% occupancy at Groot Vlei. The complexity with reducing the numbers rises from a number of factors. Groot Vlei, for example, services about 36 or 37 courts around Bloemfontein and surrounding areas. Now, practically, you have to move those offenders on a daily basis between court and correctional facilities. If you're going to move them too far, you're creating a new problem. So they have to be within proximity. Now, so that is the dilemma of trying to reduce the numbers. You can only go so far. The issue of infrastructure, I visited Benin early this year, and it was a sad story. I mean, you go there, the facility was complete, almost. I would have put it at 99%. But what had happened since, grass growing tall, cabling was pulled out because of vandalism, a whole lot of things had happened because of the intervening period, because of the contractor. By the way, it was a women empowerment group, which was another sad story, that was given that contract. It went bankrupt, sadly so. And I think it was more than one of the two facilities that were stopped right at the edge of being completed. State of the art, I can't think of a better built infrastructure than that one. So it was really a sad story. But we met with Public Works in January, and we committed to time frames by which all those things would be corrected. Of course, at an additional cost, which I think could have been avoided, but that's the situation. But the issue of infrastructure or facilities management has caught our eye since we took office, and we said we need to do a few things to improve the situation. One of the things we did was, in acknowledgement of cost containment and austerity, we're going to resuscitate offender labor beyond just agriculture, beyond just manufacturing of furniture. By the way, the furniture that I use, most of it is actually manufactured from correctional services, so I don't get to purchase new furniture from mainstream suppliers. And I'd encourage more departments to actually engage us and source from within corrections. So we've appointed directors for facilities management in all the regions to make sure that the department develops the necessary capacity to do a number of things. Now, colleague McLaughlin raises the issue of, I can't remember if it was him, of us shortchanging municipalities by not paying them their full amounts. Now, part of the reason why the amounts have reduced so drastically is because in the past, Public Works would send us a bill and would pay it without question. But now we've developing the capacity to interrogate the bills that we get, all right? And we've discovered in some instances that we're being taken for a ride, and we said, no ways. We're going to pay for that which we have used and make those savings. So we are increasingly asserting ourselves vis-a-vis Public Works in relation to facility management, leases, and payment of municipal rates and all of that. But we're going further than that. We're saying that let's use offender labor as part of our training to reintroduce in-sourced maintenance of our facilities. Our inmates adopt over 300 schools around the country. And at the start of every year, they go in the schools, they clean up the yards, they fix the broken windows, they paint the schools, they replace the ceilings that are broken, they fix the leaking roofs, etc. My own former school, for example, has benefited from that. It's a school for the blind in Polokwane. I'll be opening a new library there with state-of-the-art technology for the blind learners. We're fundraising about 2.7 million, etc. Arts and Culture is coming on board. They've adopted the school. They've made sure that whenever there are problems of blockages of this and that, they move in. So we encourage, as part of plowing back to society, adoption of schools, etc. And that's part of the training that we're offering to offenders as well, and changing social attitudes towards our offenders. The other matter relates to human resource capacity within the department. Let me concede that we have a number of Hollywood situations in the department, but you would have seen that there's been an improvement in terms of filling of vacancies. When I took office, I think the percentage was slightly higher. We've just had interviews last week and the week before for key positions of regional commissioner and human resource, etc. And we're trying to push. Obviously, the national commissioner vacancy is upcoming in the next month, etc. So we're going to have to push to make sure that at SMS level, we improve vacancy, reduce vacancy levels. But the issue of creating opportunities for young people through our internship program was one of the interventions that we made 3 years ago, where we found that our college was having an intake of one intake a year of about 1 intake a year for 3 months training. And we said, what happens to the remaining 9 months? So we said it's either at least 2 or even 3, if possible, intakes could be achieved a year, so that we are efficient in the use of the resources, but at the same time we increase the absorption capacity of the department, and in the process contribute to reducing youth unemployment. And it's paid dividends, Chair, if I may say. We have been able to absorb quite a number of young people, but now we are facing austerity. And I must say that all of us, of course, were enthusiastically shedding off some of our sorely needed resources to support the Fees Must Fall campaign, because we accept that education has to be prioritized. But I must say that the consequence of reduced budgets also has been that we have then not been able to absorb young people into our employment space as much as we would have loved to, with the further consequence that our own capacity to deliver services and meet our targets is now increasingly being under jeopardy. In 2003, that was when our last assessment was done on our, what do you call it, the structure, and we were assessed that we required 60,000 employees for us to do justice to the work we need to do. The staff complement is currently at about 42,000 and going down. So we cannot ignore the reality of the consequential impact on the pressures. And hence we've been losing experienced staff at rates which are undesirable. I'm told we've been at some point losing over 100 experienced employees a month, not a year. So those things have direct impact on capacity, and are going to have to be dealt with one way or the other. I think the issue of PPPs is a policy question that is going to have to go back to cabinet. The two PPPs we have in the Free State and Limpopo provide an ideal system of incarceration where all your norms and standards are maintained because you are able to, well, you are forced to keep it at 100% more or less. But the rest of correctional system cannot turn away people. And people have been saying, but why don't you use other measures like release these people who have made small offenses, 6 months, somebody stole milk in the at the supply chain, you know, because of poverty, etc. Chairperson, the reality is the better percentage of our inmates in our facilities are there for serious offenses. So it doesn't matter what measures, the section what, which you use with the magistrate to offload some of these minor offenses, it's a small percentage in the broader scheme of things. The reality is we have a violent society. Of course, as Parliament, you'd recall, more than a decade ago, we took a stance and said judges and magistrates are releasing people who have committed serious offenses by giving them light sentences. So we introduce a system of minimum sentences. That's where you end up with the high numbers of long-term sentences, which means people stay longer. And of course, I'm also aggravating the problem because I've become more stringent in granting people parole because I don't want people offending in my hands. One murder, one rape by somebody that I've released on parole is one too many. So those are the real social challenges. We need to improve bed space. We have some plans in the short term, but longer term, there's a lot more that we need to do. Maybe let me pause there and allow for officials to fill in. I just thought I needed to give context to some of the issues. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Chairperson, I just want to respond to two further, and then I'll ask my colleagues to provide more detail. Chairperson, in terms of the facilities, I think Honourable Minister already mentioned that we have strengthened our capacity with the assistance of National Treasury. I can say roughly in terms of 100 positions were granted since 2012 to the department to strengthen the capacity to make sure that we have people in all our regions. Chairperson, I can confirm today that in all our regions we have regional directors responsible for facilities. We even capacitate them more that we can eventually, and I think the CFO will give more details, that we want to take over the municipal services function because currently Public Works is doing that and obviously they're not doing it for free, and there's also an amount that they are asking from us that we need to pay. Chairperson, in terms of the challenges of corruption during recruitment, we have our HR person here, but safe to say, Chairperson, as a principal point, in terms of Section 95 of the Correctional Services Act, we have what we call a departmental investigating unit that are investing and focusing and only investigating serious corruption cases, maladministration, and this type of allegations about recruitment. And Chairperson, I can assure the committee that this team is full-time busy to follow up on all these allegations, and I can also say that the few days I'm acting, I already received some information which we have conveyed to them, and I am receiving constant feedback from them on these allegations. And Chairperson, we are not hesitating to take actions where necessary, criminal actions or disciplinary actions in all those who are involved in this type of activities. Chairperson, let me also say that in terms of the results of our MPAT
as presented. We as leadership of correctional services, although we are taking note of the improvements as presented from the preliminary till the final results, Chairperson, we are not happy with that. And as Mr. Katenga was saying, we do have a plan. But since we had the discussion, we also implemented additional processes and measures which will be situated in the Office of the National Commissioner, where we are tracking and focusing on monthly progress on the respective key performance areas. Because, Chairperson, we want to follow a more individualized as well as an evidence-based progress. Chairperson, as you were saying that you are PEDI, what we want to do is to create a Hobonsa principle. And I'm always struggling to find Afrikaans and English word for the real Hobonsana, where the management of correctional services is all aware of progress, and collectively we can then assist each other on those areas where you have ones and twos and threes, because we are not content with that. And Chairperson, I can assure you that the leadership who are here and those who were not invited is that we are taking this one serious, and I'm sure when you recall us next year, the results of the MPATS especially will be different, and we will achieve more of the fours and the threes. Chairperson, and Mr. Katenga can explain why we don't have just two, because it's not our system, it's a DPME system, but he can explain that. Thank you for now, Chairperson. I will ask my colleagues to fill in on the other. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Just on the last comment by the Acting National Commissioner, the standards are determined by DPME, and they're intended to measure the progressive improvement in terms of management practices in government departments. So where you'd have the level of one, it's where your policies, processes, and procedures are not in place. When you would progress to say you would have those policies in place, but you are not fully implementing. And then the ultimate, which is a four, is we're implementing and reviewing and ensuring that we're consistently improving. So that's why those four levels exist. The other question was on slide three with regards to why program one did not appear on the screen there. And that was because the Auditor General specifically selected the four key programs, the line function programs for audit purposes, and not program one. So that's where the majority of the work took place. And in terms of the payment of suppliers on the MPAT process, it has been non-compliant consistently because of the issues of the tracking of invoices and the submission of reports. But as I said, the action plan is going to address all of those issues for the 2017 round. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will deal with the issue of accruals and payables. Chairperson, we are aware that the fact that we've got accruals and payables is not proper financial discipline. However, as indicated, the cost drivers that are influencing the expenditure, such as the inmates are continuously increasing, and the underlying inflationary increases on those particular items far exceeds what we are provided. So in real terms, as well as inflation adjustment, we have that constraint. And we are obviously have implemented measures to ensure that we reduce that bill. As indicated by the Minister and the Acting National Commissioner, we are taking over the management of municipal accounts, which will result in savings of approximately 65 million annually. So we'll manage them ourselves because we have people who can do our own meter reading and obviously pay those bills instead of deferring it to DPW. As we've indicated, in terms of our efficiency measures and cost containment measures, we have introduced the impact of that in the first quarter of this financial year resulted in a 32% reduction in some of the targeted expenditure items under goods and services. And those efficiency gains or savings will be utilized, obviously, to ensure that we reprioritize the budget towards the items that are constrained, and in this case, municipal services as well as outsourced food items. In the medium term, we've already in discussions to say that let's look at utilization of renewable energy, because that would obviously further reduce the bills in relation to consumption of water in particular. One other question was in relation to the 65% of items that are attracting higher than higher inflation. Just to provide the averages, in relation to outsourced nutrition, that's the 8% of the 65%. On public-private correctional facilities, we spend 15% of that budget towards the payment of triple P's, 7% to food items, which is for food that is bought for our own food preparation. 20% of that budget goes to accommodation charges, which is payable to DPW, and 15% towards municipal services. So there is really some of these items are earmarked, and there's no room, obviously, to move. In most cases, we are doing fund shifts towards those items that are earmarked. As I indicated, Chairperson, our actual expenditure on municipal services, water and electricity alone, was 1.3 billion. We only allocated 860 million. So it is, given such a big shortfall, it's really impossible to move 400 million from other items, because all of them are actually a primary requirement, particularly when you look at food items. There was a question in relation to SEM, whether we reviewed bids. We don't review bids below 20 million. We do review bids below 20 million. Due to capacity, we do on a sample basis and ensure that we are able to cover as many regions as possible. The 20 million is a threshold which is a threshold that we've determined for internal audit reviews. The one below 20 million is done by the head office supply chain who are reviewing those that are in the regions. I think that's in the main, those are my responses. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson,
just on the issue of the sale of posts, to indicate that when I took office, one of the hymn books that I have sought to introduce in management discussions is that I personally do not negotiate contracts or tenders. I do not approach any official to say, hire this one, he's my relative or my comrade or my friend or my girlfriend or whatever. And I've made it very clear that any member of staff at whatever level who does the opposite does it at their own peril. Right. I may not have all the eyes at the back and the front and the side to see what's going on, but things tend to find their way out somehow. And we've made it very clear that our stance against corruption is firm. Any tender that was found wanting and was brought forward is either being challenged before court or it's with the SIU. I have never held on to a single draft proclamation, even from my own departments that I run, and blocked it from making its way to the president to sign that proclamation so that the SIU can investigate. Because we're saying we need to live by example. Because ultimately the SIU also reports to me, the NPA reports to me, and we have to make sure. And I always check with the NPA, do you have a case of corruption that comes from investigation that is on your desk, which is not receiving attention? And I'm constantly informed that contrary to what is said out there in the public, they don't have such cases. It's either matters are still under investigation, etc. So our stance is very clear. If somebody has a case to answer with the NPA, with the SIU, so be it, or internal proceedings within our department. That's just the one issue I wanted to highlight. The second issue I wanted to highlight, Chair, is that, we inherited a situation where violence have had to be used year in, year out, effectively to correct a wrongly structured budget. Care, goods and services, especially with regard to nutrition, especially outsourcing is a major cost driver there, has never been corrected so that it properly reflects what our real expenditure on care is. And year in, year out, we've had to take from human resource budget to augment in order to fill. And we've said this thing has to be corrected. And I think that now that Treasury is here, there has to be a serious discussion between the department and Treasury. Because it just is a bad reflection that we can't manage to manage our things. I don't know how it's going to happen in the face of austerity. Because increasingly the demand for increasing our staff complement is rising for the reasons that have been given. And of course, at the same time, the cost of feeding our inmates, looking after them, maintaining all these international human rights standards costs money. Where is the money going to come from? So we really need to have a serious discussion where we do a proper costing of our correctional system in this country to say, if we're serious about keeping especially serious criminals, I'm not talking about petty criminals, those are not an issue. Serious criminals behind bar for as long as we want to keep them, how much are we prepared to pay for it as a society? And that would be my last word, Chair. Thank you.
And I must commend you for being exemplary in terms of a politician who does not interfere with administration. That's what is expected, actually. That is the expectation. A politician not to interfere with administration and allow administration to run smoothly. Thank you very much for being exemplary.
Chairperson, if we may, Mr. Khoza from HR, just to provide some additional information with regard to the allegations of recruitment corruption. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, with regard to allegations of corruption on recruitment, the Minister has also raised this thing that, we are making it difficult for other people that are not known to us as correctional officials to come to the department to be recruited. So we are facing a challenge in the sense that allegations are made. When we follow through on to those allegations, people are not coming forth to give us statements and also point out directly to those people that are responsible. So when we hear these allegations, like we with KZN, and others in Gauteng, we had to restructure the panelists who are going to conduct those interviews because we had an early warning. So we changed and rotated the people that are going to serve on those panels. So we are battling to get able to prosecute up until the end. Chairperson, with regard to the filling of positions, The question was asked whether what is the reason of us failing to fill those positions. I am as able to indicate that we are trying our level best to fill the vacant positions. Our challenge is the high natural attrition, in a sense that we experience most of members that are resigning. If I may share with the committee that we had about only in the financial year 2016-17, we had about 164 officials that has passed on. We had 98 officials that were dismissed. We had early retirements of 114 because our department also has got people that are ailing, and we have an aging workforce as well. So we had to experience resignations of about 410 and the retirements of 251. So more or less in a year we had about 1,300 resignations in totality. So we have that particular challenge. The question was asked whether a critical post. Yes, that the positions that are vacated, most cases are critical positions. So which is the bulk of our staff on establishment. Thank you.
Honourable members, I take it that all your questions have been responded to. I will now allow you for follow-up questions. And let's also, if you have new questions, you may as well raise them. Honourable Member Gwabaza,
Thank you, Chairperson. I noticed that your supply chain management is quite alive, but we are not hearing much about your internal audit, your independent audit committee, and all the risk management structures that should be there. I raise this question, Chair, in the light of the issue raised earlier on about, what looks like very good spending, 100%, 98%, and so on, but on targets achieved, it's on the low side. Yes. So there is no match between the money spent and the targets achieved. That's the first thing. The second issue is on the, I think, slide 7, 11, and 14. 11 and 14 speak to one another. I'm just saying, but there is something that is not quite clear on slide 11. Let me go there. Your goods and services on program 2, incarceration. You have an over expenditure of 105.09%, and then on the other side, slide 11, you have on the same goods and services 106.71%. And I'm saying slide 11 and 14 speak to one another, it's the same thing. I'm not so sure what's the difference between goods and services in slide 6, and goods and services in slide 11. If you could explain that, because it gives a different over expenditure. The last issue, Chairperson, you have reported that you are where you report on your supply chain management, the opportunities for SMMEs, and I imagine you include cooperatives as well there. Quite appreciated, but if you could give us the figures. How many SMMEs and or cooperatives are you engaging as you give them the business opportunities, as they do business with yourselves? How many of them? What's the monetary value of the business between yourself and these SMMEs? And of course, it would be interesting as well to look at the profile thereof, you know, women, youth, people with disability, and so on. If that information is available, share it with us. If not, it could be given in writing at a later stage. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other intervention? All right. Yes. Honourable Member Topham and Honourable Member Snukwanyane, Honourable Member McLaughlin.
Two things, Madam Chair. One specifically for the department. Those outputs, agricultural outputs, sound quite impressive. It would be quite interesting for that information to be benchmarked some way for the Department of Agriculture and maybe even discussed with the Department of Rural and Land Reform, because I think there's a lot of synergies that need to be investigated going forward. Specifically, it could even assist with halting some of the urbanization which is taking place in South Africa. So I think there's a lot of very positive learning that might be able to be obtained from that, and specifically to see how efficient these prison farms actually are, comparatively the cost of running a prison farm compared to a more structured facility, etc. I think that might be some work, maybe not for our department to look, for our community to look at in the future, but it could be beneficial for bit of interdepartmental cooperation there to find some solutions to the other problems which have come before this committee. And the second issue is more general requests. Maybe it's possible, Madam Chair, that in future that the various reports which are used by the departments for compiling their presentation to us, etc., can also be sent to us, preferably beforehand. It might make it easier to understand some of the information presented and raised for questions. But I think it should come from our side, potentially, when they are tabled maybe in the respective committees, maybe we should request that they're tabled with us as well for the future use when we interrogate them. Thank you.
Thank you for the questions. Honourable Member Snukwanyane.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I think some of the things that I was going to ask have been answered because they were overlay colleagues, and also one of them being the issue of the of the funded vacant posts, which I wanted to ask, so it's been answered actually. But the issue of over expenditure, particularly on goods and services, I know we've spoken to the issue of accruals and so on, but how does this impact on unauthorized expenditure? Has the department incurred a lot of unauthorized expenditure as a result of this over-expenditure? Then the other thing is in terms of cost containment measures, which I think is a good initiative, but the issue of capping of official kilometers, what does it mean? Do you stop people from going there? Although I saw the conference... the video conferencing that you've also are utilizing, but the capping of the kilometers, because I know your department is a traveling department. And then the other major is that of reviewing of planned infrastructure projects. The minister has actually taken us through some processes there. But now, in terms of reviewing, what is it there to do? To stop some of them in view of the fact that you already have challenges of overcrowding. Do you stop some of the infrastructure projects? Because I think we have a serious problem of infrastructure across the government departments. Thank you.
Thank you for your question.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Just a couple of questions. Do you have an amount per day that it costs you to keep an inmate, whether he be awaiting trial or a sentenced prisoner? And then can you tell us, on average, how long does an awaiting trial prisoner stay in the facilities? I mean, obviously, he might be found not guilty and released after the trial. He might become a sentenced prisoner. But for that period that he is awaiting trial, what is the average length of time? And then, did I understand you correctly that you said there are currently 14,000 prisoners are serving life sentences, but we've got 116,000 sentenced prisoners, so that means that 102,000 of them would be short-term prisoners as opposed to life prisoners. What would be the average sentence of someone who's not a life prisoner but who's a shorter term? Do we have some kind of picture there? I'm just trying to get an idea. I just wanted to echo my colleague's request as well. You know, on slide 12, for example, at the bottom you say detailed 2017-18 annual procurement plan is at Annexure D. We don't have Annexure D. Would it be possible for us to get Annexure D and Annexure C that are also referred to in your reports? Because it would help us get a better picture of what you're talking about there. And then just lastly, obviously from a layman's point of view, it seems you have three major factors for your department. You need the infrastructure, you need staff, and you need the facilities, the food, etc., that goes into keeping all the prisoners fed and happy and healthy and all the rest of it. In the long term, do you have a picture that says our sort of ratio of increase of inmates is running at 10% per year, therefore we need to increase our facilities, our available bed numbers by the same ratio once we've caught up to the shortfall we have, and that then translates into how much per day you're going to need to pay for all those inmates and how much of it you can sort out yourselves through the farm labourer and the food you can produce there. Do you have a sort of long-term picture? That it will be very useful from a budgeting point of view, because you know, we here as the Appropriations Committee to try and have a look at the money you've got, what you do with it, do you need more, do you need less? And so there's a bit of a disconnect for me in the way you've set out your targets, for example. Acting Commissioner Smallberg, you gave us an idea of the targets you'd achieved and why you hadn't achieved some of the targets. But these are non-financial targets. They don't speak to the money you've spent. And I'm just wondering whether there isn't some better way we could understand your targets and the spending that's involved in achieving your targets. Just in the bigger picture, because in looking ahead, we know more or less what we're in for going forward if the current trends continue. Obviously, it would be desirable if we could reduce the number of inmates, reduce the crime rate in the country, and turn things around. But obviously, at the moment, that doesn't look as though it's going to be happening in the short term. So we have to look at the medium term to long term. Thank you, Chair.
No alignment of the budget and the targets. So in terms of the PFMA, this one is an imperative. You have to align or link your budget with your program. So this one is it's a requirement. Otherwise, time allowing and moving forward, we would have to request you to show us your APP, annual performance plan, so that we can check on that alignment, because there must be an alignment, so that there is no excuse at the end of the financial year for not having achieved your targets because your targets were not aligned to your budget. Again, my reaction also on the HR gentleman. I know you gave us information on the 1,000 resignations, and you call that a challenge. But for a person who is qualified, an HR person is qualified, you can't have this challenge. Because remember, when a person resigns, that person will give you a month's notice, which means that's when you must start to recruit to fill that position. You don't wait until a person is gone before you start to recruit, in terms of the recruitment process. And the prescribed recruitment process is, turnaround is 3 months. It's 3 months. So meaning that you can't go on and on forever recruiting and prolonging the process, because obviously it's going to impact on your performance, because for the successful implementation of your strat plan, you need personnel. So obviously, somewhere where you're not performing, it is because you have a lot of vacant posts. And this is also impacting on your budget expenditure, because there's an under expenditure on personnel. It is. And just as a reminder, both the over expenditure above 2% and the under expenditure beyond 2%, they're an offense. And you don't want us to start by recommending that you have committed an offense and you must be apprehended. It's an offense. So we want to sensitize you on that one, so that whatever you do, you must be sensitive of or conscious of balancing your performance with compliance. You've got to comply with your PFMA and you've got to comply with your treasury regulations. And then as you gave us this challenge, which you called a challenge, and I think it's not a challenge, but it's an underperformance, you have left out the 415 employees that are suspended with retention of salary. And there, because I told you we follow the money, we see wasteful expenditure, and also we see a fruitless expenditure. Now, we would also want you to, because this one is costing you 18, plus minus 18 million. That's a lot of money that you could use to, you know, extend your infrastructure projects, development, and buying more beds. And, you know, I think you could use it better somewhere else than people who are just sitting at home receiving this money. And we also do not know the history or how long has this visa suspension been. And why are they not being attended to with immediate effect? Because you've got to be sensitive to the taxpayer's money. That has got to be used for the benefit of the taxpayer. So I think these were my two reactions. But then the internal auditor, my concern with the internal, do you have the internal auditor here?
Yes.
My concern with the internal auditor, you see, everybody that is appointed should be gainfully employed, gainfully. The state must gain, because also you're getting paid for that. Now, we still, with a qualified internal auditor, we have risk management issues, and this we know that at the beginning of the financial year, you must go on this exercise, risk management identification, develop a risk management plan, and then if there must be a risk management plan implementation, there must be a risk manager to implement that plan. But your MPAT still alludes to a non-compliance. How come? If you have a qualified internal auditor who is supposed to do his work on a monthly basis, there must be a report. And on a quarterly basis, he reports to the audit committee. And then unauthorized expenditure. And then here I would want to ask the management on whether there has been any consequence management on the dereliction of duty. Because those people who don't do their work, they can only be described as people who have committed dereliction of duty. Has there ever been consequence management? Because the more you punish those who do not do their work as expected, the more you will encourage people to do their work better, efficiently and effectively. And you know, in terms of the NDP talks about effective, efficient, and development-oriented public service. Now, my emphasis is on effective and efficient public service. And that's where you fall. Now, the audit committee, also, why do we have these problems when we have the audit committee that receives a report from the internal auditor on a quarterly basis, and in a year you've got four sittings, and you get paid for that? Why do we have these problems? Because you are there with a particular purpose, to make sure that there's compliance with PFMA and Treasury regulations, and you make recommendations on corrective measures, because there's no way in which you can identify a problem and not come up with corrective measures. So why? I take it that the audit committee will also respond on this one, because they are there with a purpose. Actually, we should not be experiencing these problems with these structures in place. These are internal control systems. So we shouldn't be experiencing this problem. Now, what I would also want to know is, do we have the monitoring and evaluation unit within the department? Because the monitoring and evaluation unit, together with the internal auditor, they've got to submit a report to the accounting officer on the performance and also corrective measures. And also, time and again, look at the impact. Report on the evaluation, on the impact of the work that is done in the department. So where there is a negative impact, they recommend corrective measures and monitor again for the implementation of those corrective measures that were recommended. So these are the three. That's why we've called you, because we think if, for instance, the monitoring and evaluation unit is doing its work, we wouldn't be sitting here and would not have called you, because they would have done their work. And it was not going to be necessary for us to call you, because they're supposed to do exactly what we are doing. Okay, then... my question now is, we note that electronic tagging devices on parolees forms part of your monitoring process. However, there has been concerns raised on the contracts agreed to, and we remain concerned with value for money and adherence to laws and regulations and avoidance of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Kindly provide an update on the issues pertaining to contracts on electronic tagging. Pertaining to electronic tagging contracts. Okay, and then also indicate if there has been any unauthorized expenditure. Unauthorized expenditure is not corruption. It's just somebody who has decided not to comply with the law. And that's where the dereliction of duty comes in, and there has to be consequence management. But in our assessment, acting national commissioner, I take it that you're acting as the head of the department, am I right? Yes. In our assessment, when we look at our work and also check on the impact that we want to make, we have found that whilst we're talking about consequence management, actually that is talking to you, DG and Honorable Minister. That's where the consequence management. If things are not happening, the person whose head is going to be chopped. Sorry to say it. We've got to be honest, because truth will set us free one day. It is your head. So if you don't do it, your head is going. You accept that, ne? And fortunately, I knew. We knew broom sweeps clean. And if you don't do it, when you call you in our next meeting, I promise you, the recommendation will be strictly on chop the head, because he's not effective and he's not efficient in his work. Okay. So I think that's where we can. And then again, we have National Treasury represented here. We call National Treasury for a purpose. Well, National Treasury indicated in his report, remember they give us quarterly reports, expenditure reports, that they are also concerned about higher than planned spending on fleet services agency and support or outsourced services, property payments, and other items. Now, please comment on issues raised thus far and any other key concerns which the committee and the department may consider going forward. Now, this one is a response that we expect from National Treasury, but also other things that we'd want to intervene on. But also to say to the department, to the acting national commissioner, overexpenditure, just to simplify so that you understand what it's all about, even if there is a demand, overexpenditure says you are using money you don't have. Imagine in your home setup. Okay, let me leave you. In my home setup, there's no money, and I go on buying things. But there is no money. Can you see what that will do to the department? It will indeed collapse the department. So you can't use money you don't have. That's where you've got to apply your fiscal discipline. Restrain yourself from using money you don't have, because this also gets translated into an unauthorized expenditure. And strictly speaking, the person who must pay, people must pay that unauthorized expenditure. That's procedural. A person who engages on an unauthorized expenditure must pay, or if maybe there is saving in the department, they must find a way of reimbursing that unauthorized expenditure. And I'm afraid the DG is the one who will be expected to pay. I've learned this. I joined the civil service in 1981. Now you know that I've learned you cannot bend the rules. That's what makes me. You can't break the procedure. And you do things within the parameters of the law, or else then consequence management kicks in. So you will hear our language. Now, it's not like we're fighting with you. We're talking to issues that affect your budget implementation, but also affects the impact that your budget is supposed to make in bringing a better life for our people under your outcome, which is you have to bring safety and security to people of this country. I think, yes, we will now allow you to respond to the issues raised. Honorable Minister.
Chair, indeed, you're on point in saying that accountability demands that all of us have to, in as much as we're held accountable, we should hold those that report to us equally accountable, and failure to do so will leave us wanting. I've announced today, for example, that the National Commissioner is leaving us upon retirement at the age of 60. We had the option of, in consultation with him, to extend his contract for the full 5-year period that Cabinet had approved. But in the end, we left matters at the 2 years that he had already done and not went the full monty of 5 years. And this is despite the fact that under his leadership, the department, since democracy, managed to register an unqualified audit outcome in the last financial year, and in the current one, save for not properly accounting for our bed space rollout properly, thanks to the difficulties from Public Works and their entities, now we have to be qualified for it, but we accept that, and I'm sure the officials will learn from that, because they were pre-warned by the Auditor General, and they could have done a little more than they did, so they can't quite make an excuse of it. But had it not been for that, we believe we would have registered a second year in democracy of an unqualified audit as a department. And in a number of areas, you would have seen that we've moved to significant improvement levels from where we were. But despite all of that, we nonetheless felt that, we're not going to insist on the National Commissioner staying on. And that was not easy for me, given the my personal knowledge of the man and what he's capable of in terms of his experience of about 38 years in corrections that we then have to lose. But Chair, it's just in the nature of things. If things are not getting to a point where we are completely satisfied, we have to make those hard decisions. And I'll leave it at that. We have a situation of the Regional Commissioner for KZN, who has been having running battles with the department over some disciplinary matter that's now gone for over a year. How long is it now? Almost 2 years. Characterized by interlocutory court applications to block suspension, to challenge the process, the procedure, etc. So we've been in and out of court for 2 years in an attempt by the department to enforce consequence management. It's easier said than done, I often say. Under our constitutional dispensation, people have rights. They'll fight to write to the Concord, and 5 years down the line, after bleeding a few millions in legal costs, you still might actually be having somebody sitting at home and drawing a full salary. That's just the nature of it. So we're just saying that where action can be taken swiftly, cheaply, and with as few headaches as possible, let's opt for those interventions. But I must also say that one of the instructions we've given to the department, you do have instances of malicious, I wouldn't say prosecution because it's not in a criminal court, but persecution of junior officials where people try to create their own fiefdoms within institutions. And we've said where the department has no real basis to pursue an employee but for personal prejudices, let those cases just stop. Let people be brought back to work and let those suspensions be gotten rid of, because this is a human rights-based society. I'm not going to defend or fight cases in court in my name for things that just don't make sense, which are unfair on people. So we've asked the officials to really interrogate the basis on which people are being taken on. And if there's no merit in it, abandon the thing and let people be allowed to make their contribution. But where there are genuine cases of transgression, I'm sure that at Scopa a few months ago, the department has made an undertaking to give an update on how far they are in implementing some of those written reports. So I would suggest that that report, once it's ready, be shared with the standing committee, because I think they gave themselves deadlines of August, September, by which they would be in a position to indicate how many of those cases they've finalized. But that was just in terms of consequence management, Chair. I've lamented the fact that if you take, for example, the area of ICT, there have been repeated irregularity on very much the same lines, on similar issues, you know. Didn't obtain prior approval from, what is this institution, CETA, before you procured ICT services. Why do you repeat the same mistake again and again and again? Because you know that that is going to amount to an irregularity, you know? And the Auditor General has highlighted some of these issues. I've said to the commissioner, outgoing commissioner, I want to see consequence management and updates on this. He now takes over the sins, and he'll have to account for it. But, Chair, I'm just trying to say that to the extent that we identify problems, and we've noticed that, for example, at some point we had 40 million rands, was it 400 or 40 million rands spent on people on suspension for longer than a year. Out of that 40 million, if it was 40, we were told 25 million was from KZN alone. So it's already having a geographical tint to it. And we think that the underlying management issues there could be the explanation, you know. And that's why some of the consequence management was directed there. I'm not saying there was a link between the two, but I'm just saying there's been a number of areas of underperformance as a result of bad management, which have also had a geographical slant to it. So we're saying that let's zoom into those regions where the problem seems to manifest and see closely where the root cause is and deal with it. But I'll leave it at that in the interest of time, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Minister and Chairperson and Honourable Members. I think our Honourable Minister have addressed the matter of consequence management, and Chairperson, I want maybe to repeat what I was saying in the beginning, to say that I'm quite aware of what you shared with us as well as what Minister shared. We know that the acting will not be easy, but I think we are ready to see what difference can we make. I think we can. I want again just put that in front of the committee. Chairperson, I'm going to maybe start where you have ended and then the colleagues can fill in. Chairperson, I think the most important one that you have raised was the matter of electronic tagging. Chairperson, I think it needs to be confirmed that on 15 April 2016, the Honourable President have proclamated a proclamation for the investigation of what is proclamated as irregularity procurement of...
Promulgated.
My apology, Minister. Thank you. To look into the procurement of the electronic monitoring. Now, the SIU is doing that investigation, and in the meantime, they have shared some information with us, and the decision was taken in the meantime based on available information that there was sufficient reason and reasons to terminate the contract, and the service provider were given notice during March of this year that we cancelling the contract with effect from 30 June 2017. And in the meantime, there's, like all other cases, the service provider initially have taken us to court, and it was set down for 18 July, and then SIU indicated that they also want to join to be second respondent, and it was allowed, and the urgent matter is not pursued by the service provider, but from the department side, Chairperson, we have approached the Honourable Deputy Judge President in the North Gauteng High Court to put it back on a semi-urgent basis of reasons that we have and convince from counsel that we need to do that. Chairperson, in terms of that is the process where we are currently.
It's obvious, Chairperson, that there will also consequence management flowing from the report from the SIU, and in early indications are obviously pointing in that direction. Chairperson, but if it's allowed, I will not go into the finer details for now in terms of that contract. Chairperson, I want to confirm what the Honourable Minister was saying in terms of consequence management. We, I think from HR, they indicated the number of people that we have dismissed in the previous financial year. The question may be whether it is sufficient or the action that we are taking is sufficient in terms of consequence management. And I want to say, Chairperson, that there is also room for improvement to do it differently and better. We don't want to argue, Chair, in terms of that part. Chairperson, we do have our Chief Executive Auditor here who's acting currently, who can really address the committee. We have also the Chairperson of the Audit Committee here. We have also the Interim Chairperson of the Risk Management Committee also here, who can really just share with the committee. And Chairperson, in terms of the presentation, I think we have maybe, when we started, did not make sure that the annexures which accompanied the presentation, whether it was distributed, because Chairperson, it was submitted, and there's also some slides on this bodies like the Audit Committee and the Risk, but we'll ask the colleagues just to summarize and give at least some assurances in terms of those bodies. Chairperson, let me maybe accept your response on my reaction in terms of the linking of targets with the alignment of budget. Chairperson, I can confirm that all our targets in the APP are linked with budget allocations. And I think we are compliant because the oversight bodies, Treasury, as well as other bodies, are also assisting and signing off. Chairperson, maybe my words used were wrong, and I want to sincerely apologize for that. What I was merely trying to say that the fact that there are escapes doesn't mean that we haven't spent the money. The people were on duty, but due to the dereliction of duty and or not doing what they're supposed to do caused that, Chairperson, but I can confirm that there is a link in terms of targets with our budget. Chairperson, your comments and your reaction and advice on the suspension of our officials, on the HR, where we indicated that's a challenge, Chair, I think your advice is well received, and we can also use better explanation than to make it as if it is a challenge. We have noted that, Chair, and we appreciate that. Chairperson, in terms of the suspension, the 18 million, HR, if there's time, can give us maybe the categories of those people who are suspended, linked with time, and also what we have put in place to down manage it. Because as the Honourable Minister was saying, Chair, when he have taken office, it was much higher than now. I think it was more than double, even more than that, which we can explain. Chairperson, there were questions about the average time of people who are awaiting trial in our facilities. Chairperson, I want to propose that we respond in writing. We have that information available, but as I was saying, Chairperson, we were not aware what areas will be covered, so I don't think we we have prepared for everything, and with the indulgence of the committee, we will provide that information as well as the measures in place and what was in our Amended Correctional Services Act measures to manage awaiting trial detainees. And as the Minister was saying, we were a few years back about 60,000. We are now just about 40,000. So we can share that in writing if it's fine, Chairperson. Chairperson, in terms of the areas of the targets, I think we have Mr. Katenga here that can also assist by providing some additional information. Chairperson, the inmate cost per day, the CFO may assist because there's two amounts here. It's normally your direct cost as well as your cost per capita, which he can assist and share with the committee. Chairperson, if I go to the point of the agriculture, I think we really take that also very positively. I can confirm that we have a good relationship with the Department of Agriculture because we are relying also on them to assist. Chairperson, I think as a matter of principle, I can say to the committee that our correctional farms are not a direct link or the same as farms that are being managed by sophisticated equipment, because our farms are also there for skills transfer, but also to keep people in work opportunities so that they are not sitting and idling in their cells. So we are not on the same type of sophistication in our farms. But surely, Jay, we can still go back and see how do we increase our partnerships with the relevant departments, and we appreciate that advice and information. Chair, there was a question on the filling of critical positions. I just want to repeat what Honourable Minister was saying, that we have interviews on the 17th, 25th, as well as after this meeting on three DDG positions, and the Minister is chairing those, and we are really trying to make progress, and I think after today we will then be in a position to announce further on those three positions. Chairperson, cost containment measures and the capping of kilometres. I think I need to provide some perspective. Chairperson, to have a cap meaning a maximum number of kilometres per senior management manager as well as middle management managers is not to stop them from doing their work. It's just to manage their kilometers, because, Chair, since we have implemented this capping, Chairperson, we have saved millions of rands. If there are good reason for people to travel more, from the CFO as well as to the Acting National Commissioner, we are considering, Chairperson, those who need to drive for specific reasons. So it's not a free-for-all, Chairperson. It's managed, and I think we achieved very positive results this far. Although, Chairperson, we add in terms of our administration, but I think it's a worthwhile exercise to make sure that, as you also alluded in terms of overspending, that we remain within our budget. And this measures, Chairperson, is not always easy, but there are positive results. Chairperson, in terms of the SMMEs, I think I want also up front to say that I don't think we have that information, and we will need to provide that in writing. Chair, that is so far that I can say, and again, Chairperson, I think we need to allow then the Acting Chief Audit Executive as well as the Chairperson of the Risk as well as the Audit Committee maybe to elaborate on the questions posed to them, and the CFO as well as the other colleagues might also respond to some of the other questions that are more technical of nature. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. From internal audit point of view, we previously had challenges around capacity. However, in the 2016-17 financial year, we actually appointed a total of 18 internal auditors, 13 of which are based in the regional offices. Two were appointed for financial audits, and then we also appointed three SMS members. In terms of what the improvement brought about by this appointment, Chairperson, is that we have better visibility at the regional offices where most of the work happens within the department,
be it incarceration, rehabilitation, and all the other programs within the department. So we are fairly visible there. And previously, Chairperson, we relied largely on consultants to execute the work, but with these appointments, we've actually executed most of our work internally, which has resulted in the retention of institutional knowledge. With regards to risk management, from an internal audit point of view, we provide assurance on the risk management processes. Indeed, we still have challenges, and in the 2016-17 financial year, we did not conduct an audit on risk management. However, we've prioritized that for the 2017 financial year, and we are currently conducting that audit. Chairperson, in terms of the work performed by internal audit, together with the recommendations for corrective action, we discuss all those with the management and also table those reports on a quarterly basis to the audit committee for further oversight and guidance. I think from our side, the remaining challenges are firstly the issue of the timely implementation of agreed action plans by management. From facing ourselves is the issue of non-implementation of our internal audit methodology, which for 17-18 we've prioritized, and we've had a number of sessions where we trained the internal audit staff on the best practices within internal audit. I think for us that will further assist us in ensuring that we improve on the quality of the work that we do, because that has been a concern that was raised by the audit committee. So I think once we've addressed the issues of capacity, currently we have 8 vacancies, which we've been granted approval to go ahead and appoint in those vacancies. And we've prioritized to do those before the end of this financial year so that we further increase our coverage and improve the quality of the work that we do, particularly in the areas of IT where we still don't have sufficient human resource capacity, but that is improving as we go along. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm the Chairperson of the Audit Committee. We do, as you had alluded, Chairperson, meet at least once a quarter with management. And we can say that there has been improvement. The committee that we're in, I think this is our second year. In the previous year, we had that, I would say, lack of getting the unqualified. Chairperson, I have to be frank and say that we do engage management mostly on most of the things that we have been discussing today. We do engage. And every quarter after our engagement, we do have, we write a report to the National Commissioner and discuss that report with National Commissioner. And at least 2 times a year, we meet with the executive authority to discuss the report. The report, in the report that we have, we do indicate the improvements together with the concerns that we have. Chairperson, I may also indicate to you that we do have an annual report that is included in the annual report of the department. In this year's annual report, we did indicate our concerns as the inadequate disciplinary processes resulting in prolonged suspensions with pay, the long outstanding investigation on irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The reliability of performance information reports. General controls over information technology. The implementation of IT projects. The increase in the accruals and payables. The effectiveness of asset management, the implementation of risk management. I can qualify there, Chairperson, as the acting commissioner had said. We do have an interim chairperson, which is the CFO. We have recommended that they do look for an independent chairperson of the risk committee. We also were concerned with the compliance with laws and regulations. And we had done, through the internal audit, audits on the rehabilitation and healthcare services together with the condition and security at correctional facilities, which reports from internal audit were not satisfactory. We've already indicated that to the National Commissioner in our meetings. Chair, I can say that at the at DCS, we do have internal audit function. As you have heard that the present today is acting internal CAE because our CAE has been suspended, but he's one of those who has been suspended for long now. And that, I would say, triples the function in the sense that the capacity within the function becomes limited. We are working on ensuring that this is addressed. We also have got vacancies within our internal, our audit committee. We're 5 members and 2 members had resigned because of personal reasons. We are now requesting the department to assist in recruiting the 2 members for those vacancies. But Chair, I have to say that it gives us comfort that we see that the department, the improvement within the department, and we are committed in ensuring that we give oversight and we support the committee and the department in achieving their objectives. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. With respect to risk management, I think I won't dwell much onto it, but we do have a risk management committee, which is only internal officials. There's no independent, but we are looking at appointing an independent chairperson. The department has the risk management functions located under internal control and compliance, and that component assists us, and we have in the current and previous financial years have had strategic risk assessment on time and ensuring that there's operational risks emanating from all regions and which are monitored with mitigation plans on a quarterly basis between head office and the regions. So we are quite moving towards a direction where we'll have a fully effective risk management function. With regards to whether the department has incurred an authorized expenditure, in 15-16, the department exceeded its vote by 121,000, and that has since been recorded. It's also in our previous financial annual financial statements as well as the current one. And the reasons around that were mainly the same factors that are still contributing towards the pressure that the department is facing on goods and services. With regard to reviewing planned infrastructure, we have only looked at, as a department, looking at developing a proper infrastructure build program, which should have fewer projects than we have now and have high impact on areas of overcrowding. So our review is mainly targeted at ensuring that we are able to have an impact on overcrowding and reduce the many projects that are in place. However, we are not stopping projects that are currently in construction. We are only reviewing those that are still at design stage. Chairperson, I think that's in the main. And with respect to the issues around SME and cooperatives, we can provide that in writing. Thank you.
Honourable members, Honourable Minister, ladies and gentlemen, indeed it has been a long day. But I am happy to say that indeed we have had a constructive engagement. Members tried not to be personal, and they focused on the work and the budget and how this budget is making an impact in the lives of the people of South Africa within your outcome, that of making people of South Africa, of giving people of South Africa safety and security. Now, I think it will be only be fair for me to just give the Honourable Minister just his closing remarks. I will then close, Honourable Minister, because we have come to the end of our engagement. You can see members have got a lot of questions they still have, but unfortunately, we have to also after lunch say human. Now we're violating people's human rights.
No, I'm particularly conscious of that last statement. We certainly are sensitive to similar human rights when it comes to our inmates as well. Some people say that we run hotels in our correctional facilities, but I can tell you, Chair, that I preside over applications of lifers, in particular for parole. And I haven't come across a single one of them who says, I don't mind staying another day longer in prison. Everybody loves their freedom, regardless of the socioeconomic pressures out there, unemployment levels and so on. And this is what we strive towards as an organization, to really, within the limited resources we have, to provide a correctional service that meets its objectives in terms of its white paper, in terms of the NDP and all the other policy instruments within the constraints, which are quite huge and challenging, as today's engagement has shown. But going forward, Chair, I believe that firstly, there's a lot more that we can achieve. There's a lot more that we have begun to achieve. The introduction of intensifying offender lay and diversifying offender labor, for example, is yielding some positive gains in terms of reducing our infrastructure maintenance costs, in terms of ensuring that the number of kilograms of meat and vegetables that were alluded to by the acting commissioner help in reducing inputs costs into ensuring that our offenders receive the care they deserve. But I must say, Chair, that we inherited a prison system. And sadly, over two decades down the line, we have adopted new laws, adopted new policies, but we have not done justice to realigning the allocation of resources to meet the new policy imperatives. Hence, the continued financial challenges that we alluded to. And unfortunately, with austerity upon us, there's very little leg room. If anything, things are being tightened up even further. So we're going to have to look for more innovative ways of meeting our mandate without offending your PSMA, the 2% above or below that you alluded to. And I think that one of the points we take is the need to improve more scientific ways of doing things, whether in terms of waste management and ensuring that waste is turned into a resource through use of scientific methods, whether in terms of a scientific way of food production that makes us efficient in the utilization of limited land space. The whole area of preservation of perishables, which can be costly, so that you know, we're able to produce more and which does not go to waste. But beyond looking after our inmates inside, we have a mandate to ensure that once our inmates have completed their programs, are released into the community, they become economically self-sufficient. And with a budget of just under $1 billion to cater for 70,000 offenders who are on parole or on community correction, it's unrealistic. Rehabilitation and training programs are also constrained by the limited resources that go into that space, despite having committed ourselves to being no longer a prison department but a corrections department, and therefore needing to place greater emphasis on that. But despite all of that, Chair, I must say that I've seen with my own eyes significant improvements. When I took office 3 years ago, I used to reject, I'm told, up to 96% of recommendations from the NCCS because they would pass on things to me that are incomplete, psychosocial reports that are not there so that I can assess the risk profile of an inmate for purposes of deciding whether we should parole them or not. I'm told now that I'm almost at 100% of approving the recommendations, almost rubber stamping the recommendations of the NCCS, which means that our message to the department itself to say do things right the first time and save the time of offenders of having to stay longer in prison just because of administrative inefficiency, not because they did not qualify for parole, is being reduced. But we still have a problem of many offenders who are still in jail when they should have long been considered for parole because of these administrative hiccups, and we're taking steps to correct that. There's a lot we can say, Chairperson, but in the interest of time, let's just thank the committee for inviting us to give us an opportunity to also reflect on ourselves. We don't see this as some kind of interrogation room that during the days of apartheid used to be the order of the day if you defy the state, but really as an opportunity for us to have a mirror to look into ourselves and see how we're doing. So we really appreciate it. And thanks to all the members for the useful questions that they helped point us in the right direction. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Honorable Minister. I would like to thank all of you for your full participation in this critical briefing from the Ministry and Department of Correctional Services, and thanks to the National Treasury and to all the stakeholders who are here. We appreciate the presentation, and we truly appreciate the presence of the Minister. Listening carefully to the presentation and in conjunction with the intervention and the responses by the department, it has become clear that to achieve our NDP goals within the remaining 18 months, I don't want you to forget that, 18 months of the MTSF period, we will have to change gears and accept that given the situation that we are in, let's do our business, or it has got to be business unusual. 18 months, if you can just gear yourselves up and tell yourselves you're going to focus, and in some programs you will have to come up with an accelerated plan, because you're changing gears now, né? And make sure that come end of this MTSF period, you achieve on all your goals that you set yourself at the beginning of the MTSF period. Of course, doing that within the parameters of the law and balancing your performance and compliance. Because we don't want to take you to jail, you see. For those over and under expenditure. Okay? Indeed, the committee members remain very concerned with attainment of an effective and humane incarceration of inmates and the rehabilitation and social integration of offenders, whilst ensuring value for money in the process. The committee also feels strongly on the effectiveness of financial management, e.g. accruals. On the accruals, you say no. So come the next financial year, because this can be managed. And actually it's a violation of the PFMA. There's no way the PFMA says you can use this the following financial year's budget for the previous financial year's budget. I mean, it doesn't sound even good. Well, committee also feels strongly on the effectiveness of financial management, procurement management, consequence management, on the dereliction of duty, contract management. I know that you said the project manager for your infrastructure development is the other department. I think we will have to find a way of also communicating with them, because they are impacting negatively on your work. That is public works. Yes, we will have to. But also, I think this is one area where you should sit together and come up with a collaboration strategy, so that they also do not impact badly on your audit opinion, because this is what we have seen through your presentation. Collaboration strategy between yourself, so that come end of the MTSF period, you are found to have completed your work. empowerment goals and supporting SMEs, this one it's a requirement. Effective planning systems and overall systems of governance. The committee wishes to highlight that there is a need to enhance planning for effective resource allocation, especially given the humane correctional centers entail, that the humane correctional centers entail psychologists, health professionals, social workers, skills training programs, and many other resources. This requires all of us, the committee, treasury, portfolio committees, relevant portfolio committees, DPME, and others to work together. Before coming here, we had to talk to DPME because we know that they've been doing work with you. We had to talk to OCTP, it's Office of the Chief Procurement Officer. We had to talk to, you see, to show that indeed, you know, we have to work together and avoid working in silos so that we can do more. Well, we welcome the commitment to provide quarterly reports in issues pertaining to human resources performance. Kindly provide all other information that you can, you think can be of good use by this committee. We have our full trust in the ministry and the leadership in the Department of Correctional Services, and we strongly believe that you have the capacity. I mean, we've engaged with you. I mean, you were able to, you know, to be on top of the game. And then that displays that you have the capacity. So because you have the capacity, it means that you can take this department to greater heights. Yes, you can take this. So please achieve on this one. Well, I mustn't forget to congratulate you for the unqualified audit opinion. Of course, in life there will always be room for improvement. In this one, your challenge will be to make a move, and a quick move, maybe at the end of this financial year. Please promise, because you have the capacity. Move to a clean audit. Just surprise the minister, so that you can entrench your further trust in the department by the broader society. And you must talk about this. Promise. The first test. Unfortunately, I have to address you. Your first test is a clean audit at the end of the financial year. Please, and we wish you all of the best in your acting position. All right. Well, let's work together. We will support you, and we all want this program to succeed. Thank you very much. Honorable members, ladies and gentlemen, the Honorable Minister, ladies and gentlemen, our meeting stands adjourned. Thank you.